From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
My wife, what came in from his head is only the jaws and part of the neck, but I identified her from the dental bridge. He has got a dental bridge. And my son, what remained from his clothes was only part of the shoes and socks.
An Iraqi doctor describing his wife and son killed on September 16th, the day Blackwater operatives opened fire in Nisar Square in Baghdad, killing 17 Iraqis. Today, we'll hear three Iraqis describe the infamous attack in their own words. The doctor, a bank employee, and a traffic guard. But first, breaking news. Blackwater is being sued again, this time for a shooting a week before, on September 9th. 5 people were killed, 10 wounded. And finally, 256 people held in Iraq prisons, including Abu Ghraib, have filed suit against another military contractor, Khaki. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The New York Times has revealed at least 4 top White House lawyers took part in talks about whether to destroy videotape showing the interrogation of 2 prisoners held in secret jails. The CIA says it destroyed the tapes to protect the interrogators, but questions remain over whether it was part of a cover-up to mask evidence of torture. The White House has claimed it advised against the CIA's move, but a former intelligence official says top White House officials expressed, quote, vigorous sentiment to destroy the tapes. The tapes were destroyed in November of 2005, over a year into the abuse scandal at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. The officials taking part included then White House counsel and later Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, David Addington, then counsel to Vice President Dick Cheney, now his chief of staff, John Bellinger, then a senior lawyer at the National Security Council, and Harriet Myers, then President Bush's deputy chief of staff, later White House counsel. The disclosure comes as a federal judge has ordered a new hearing into whether the tape's destruction violated his order to preserve evidence. U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy made the initial ruling in a lawsuit brought by 16 Guantanamo Bay prisoners in June 2005. The tapes were destroyed just 5 months later. Judge Kennedy's call for a new hearing defies Bush administration pleas for him to stay out of the case pending a Justice Department probe. Lawyers for Guantanamo prisoners say the tapes could contain proof that evidence against them was obtained through torture. In a major victory for media conglomerates, the Federal Communications Commission has approved a measure undoing a key barrier to media consolidation. On Tuesday, the FCC voted 3-2 to ease rules for companies seeking to own both a newspaper and television or radio station in the same city. FCC Chair Kevin Martin pushed the vote despite widespread opposition from lawmakers and the general public. The vote will have repercussions here in New York, where News Corp Chair Rupert Murdoch would be able to own a television station along with the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal. Dissenting FCC Commissioner Michael Copps called the vote a gift to corporations.
In the final analysis, the real winners today are businesses that are, in many cases, quite healthy. And the real losers are going to be all of us who depend on the news media to learn what's happening in our communities and keeping an eye on local government. Despite all the talk you may hear today about the threat to newspapers from the internet and new technologies, today's order actually deals with something quite old-fashioned. Powerful companies are using political muscle to sneak through rule changes that let them profit at the expense of the public interest. They are seeking to improve their economic prospects by capturing a larger percentage of the news business in communities across the United States.
The new FCC rules are likely to undergo judicial review. They could also be overturned by a congressional vote. In other news from Washington, the Democratic-led Senate has approved a $555 billion omnibus spending bill that includes another $70 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. On Tuesday, senators voted 71-24 against an amendment from Democratic Senator Russ Feingold to link the war funding to a timeline for withdrawing troops. None of the Democratic senators running for president returned to Washington for the vote. The vote comes just days after the Democratic-led Senate authorized another $189 billion in war funding. The Senate approved the spending by a vote of 90-3. The spending bill has also come under criticism for a series of earmarks, including more than $20 billion in subsidies to the nuclear industry. Meanwhile, the House has approved an energy bill that includes the first increase in fuel economy standards in 32 years. Under the new rules, cars will have to average 30 miles per gallon by 2020, a 40% increase. The bill omits financial incentives for renewable energy production sought by Democrats. Democrats were also forced to drop billions of dollars in taxes on major energy companies. The final vote was 314-100. The Federal Reserve has ruled out helping vulnerable homeowners in its plan to address the nation's mortgage crisis. On Tuesday, the Fed unveiled restrictions that would force lenders to prove borrowers can afford their loans. But the plan is not retroactive and would leave subprime borrowers without assistance. Foreclosures have skyrocketed under the boom of subprime loans, where lenders are charged above market rates they often cannot afford. Mortgage companies have come under widespread scrutiny for aggressively pushing the loans with little regard for whether they can be repaid. The Bush administration is denying allegations it backed Turkey's latest attack on Kurdish areas in northern Iraq. The Washington Post revealed Tuesday the U.S. military had been sharing intelligence with Turkey gathered from aircraft and unmanned drones. Hundreds of Turkish ground troops are said to be in northern Iraq following air raids on Iraqi villages. On a visit to Iraq, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said the U.S. had not approved Turkey's actions.
This was a Turkish decision, and we have made clear to the Turkish government that we continue to be concerned about anything that could lead to innocent civilian casualties or to a destabilization of the north.
Rice was due to meet with top Kurdish officials, but Kurdish Prime Minister Nechirvan Barzani refused the meeting, saying the Turkish raid could not have happened without U.S. backing.
As I explained to you, the United States supervises Iraq's airspace, so it is not possible that a violation of this airspace occurs without the knowledge or approval of the Americans. The United States is holding the responsibility of these attacks that harmed innocent civilians. We hope that such things will not be repeated again because the result will not be good.
In Colombia, a rebel group has announced it will release three of more than a dozen hostages to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Chavez had been involved in mediation with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, known as FARC, until Colombian President Álvaro Uribe stopped the talks last month. Uribe's move opened a new feud with Chavez and angered the hostages' relatives. Meanwhile, Chavez was in Uruguay on Tuesday for a meeting of the Latin American trade bloc Mercosur. The group brings together Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay. Chilean President Michelle Bachelet and Bolivian President Evo Morales also attended. Chavez called the pact a step towards further regional unity.
Venezuela quiere venir a Mercosur a ayudar en primer lugar.
Venezuela wants to join Mercosur to help more than anything. That is what motivates us, to help, to modestly help. We want to join ourselves, add ourselves and our modest powers to the great power of the Southern Union.
Remember,
I believe that on the destiny of Mercosur depends the destiny of South America.
The United Nations General Assembly has approved a measure to abolish the death penalty. The final vote was 104-54. Mexican UN envoy Claude Heller said the vote should encourage a global moratorium on state executions.
The purpose of this resolution is not to interfere in or impose our views on others. Our intention is to promote and strengthen the growing trend towards the elimination of the death penalty.
And back here in the United States, the campaign for Republican hopeful Mike Huckabee has responded to allegations he equated homosexuality with necrophilia. in a 1998 children's book that also equated environmentalism with pornography. Huckabee wrote, quote, "It is now difficult to keep track of the vast array of publicly endorsed and institutionally supported aberrations, from homosexuality and pedophilia to sadomasochism and necrophilia." Asked about the comments, Huckabee campaign research director Joe Carter said, quote, "No way is he saying homosexuality is like having sex with dead people. That's not it at all," he said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's program with a Democracy Now! TV broadcast exclusive. Another lawsuit is being filed against the private military firm Blackwater, this time for a shooting in Baghdad on September 9th that left 5 people dead and 10 injured. The lawsuit is being filed on behalf of the family members of one of those killed in the shooting. Susan Burke is with us today. She's an attorney who's working with the Center for Constitutional Rights on its suit against Blackwater. In October, she helped file a separate lawsuit brought by the families of 3 Iraqis killed in the infamous Nisour Square shooting on September 16th. Susan Burke joins us today in our Firehouse studio. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you for having me.
Explain this latest suit.
This is a lawsuit on behalf of the family of Ali Abbas. This gentleman was a rug merchant, and he was gunned down for absolutely no reason, leaving behind a 20-day-old baby daughter and family. It is, again, another instance in which Blackwater shooters, you know, shot first, asked questions later.
Explain exactly what you understand transpired on September 9th.
What happened is that Blackwater was driving through an area and began to engage in fire. This particular gentleman was inside his rug store. He had just put his 15-year-old younger brother in the cab to go home. Hearing the shooting outside, he walked outside concerned about his younger brother because he heard the shots. So he walks out of the rug store and gets shot and killed.
And how did you learn about this?
We learned about this from the family members. What happened is, as you know, we represent a fair number of Iraqis in a separate suit, so we do have offices over in Baghdad. We were approached by the family of this victim to try to bring some form of accountability to Blackwater.
What has Blackwater responded, or have they?
We are just filing this today, so this is the breaking news. They do not yet know it. They'll receive the papers today.
And what is understood in the community there about what happened?
Well, sadly, the Iraqis, you know, they suffer from this a lot. Although the Nisour Square shooting received a lot of press attention, the reality is that this has been an ongoing tragedy for the Iraqis. The Blackwater shooters have no regard for human life, and they use an excessive amount of force repeatedly. We have discovered information in our investigation that Blackwater has a substantial problem with uncontrolled drug use, steroid use. And that just adds to this terrible sense of, you know, slaughter.
What proof do you have of the drug use, of the steroid use?
We have interviewed people that have firsthand knowledge.
And how do you know in this September 9th shooting, revealing today for the first time that this lawsuit, it's being filed today.
It's being filed today in federal court.
That it was Blackwater operatives who did it?
We were able to confirm that by the descriptions of the vehicles as well as by some media reporting.
We're talking to Susan Burke. She has filed a lawsuit today, is filing a lawsuit again against Blackwater for an attack that happened a week before the infamous Nisour Square attack on September 16th. And now graphic new details about that attack on September 16th in Nisour Square in Baghdad. The legal team suing Blackwater has conducted a series of extensive interviews with witnesses and victims of the shooting. Today, we're going to hear and see 3 Iraqis who were caught up in the attack, a traffic guard who witnessed the shootings and tried his best to help the victims, a computer technician on his way to buy a gift who was shot in the arm, and a doctor whose wife and son were shot and burnt to death in the attack. Their stories stand in stark contrast to Blackwater CEO and founder Eric Prince's congressional testimony on October 2nd. This is Democratic Congressmember Danny Davis questioning Eric Prince.
You do admit that Blackwater personnel have shot and killed innocent civilians, don't you?
No, sir, I disagree with that. I think there's been times when guys are using defensive force to protect themselves, to protect the package they're trying to get away from danger. There could be ricochets. There are traffic accidents. Yes, this is war. Since 2005, we've conducted in excess of 16,000 missions in Iraq and 195 incidences with weapons discharge. In that time, did a ricochet hurt or kill an innocent person? That's entirely possible. But again, we do not have the luxury of staying behind to do that terrorist crime scene investigation to figure out what happened.
We invited Blackwater on Democracy Now! Today to respond to the allegations and the interviews with witnesses and victims of the September 16th shooting. They declined. Susan Burke, today we're going to play for the first time on television the video that you did when you went to Istanbul to meet with the people who were victims or eyewitnesses. Describe how you met them, the scene, and we're going to go first to the traffic guard.
Certainly. We flew over and we flew out from Baghdad, this group of five people. And then I had with me Keith Roman, our investigator, who had the video equipment. And we rented a room in a hotel, brought in some translators that we have worked with in the past, and conducted an extensive interview in order to try to pin down the precise details of what happened.
The first witness we're going to watch and hear from is Ali Khalaf Salman. He started working as a traffic guard in Nisour Square in 2004. On the morning of September 16th, he was directing the flow of traffic in the square as usual when he spotted four large all-terrain vehicles with guns mounted on top approaching the intersection. Salman did what he usually does. Whenever a security convoy approaches, he stops civilian traffic to clear a path for the convoy. In painstaking detail, Salman goes on to describe how the Blackwater shooting unfolded, including the opening shots that killed a mother and her son. Ali Khalaf Salman is being translated into the interview. You'll also hear Susan Burke, our guest today, questioning him from time to time. These are highlights of his description, beginning with how the four Blackwater vehicles entered Nisour Square.
الحصل توقفن اربع سيارات تجني وصلا لهنا سووا نصف دائري سياره هنا هنا سياره هنا سياره الثانيه الثالثه هنا الرابعه هنا نصف دائري سوت
okay he said they stopped in a semicircle
they
the cars one was right here and one here one here one here in a semicircle
so all four were in the actual round part of
yes.
the square
yes, yes.
باتجاه اليرموك
أربعة إلى خمسة
ثلاثة إلى
ثلاثة إلى أربعة ده الشخص اللي طالع في العربية
طالع في العربية اللي ثالث سيارة ثالث عجلة
okay. He said the man in the third car started firing his gun towards this direction the Yarmouk direction and he fired three to four shots
and what did
randomly
what did that man look like
طيب الشخص كان شكله كيف
ضخم.
He was big.
صاحب شعر عريض.
Big mustache.
مستاش.
يعني أحمراني.
Strong.
كان أبيض يعني.
أبيض.
He was white.
أحد يتحرك وراي. شنو الحركة صارت وراي؟
من الحركة طيب. بس أشوف السبب ليه بيضرب هو.
ليش بيضرب؟ أكو أحد يتحرك، أكو أحد إجا، أكو أحد ولد يعني مثلا شخص مدني دا يمشي أو.
Okay. He said actually he was facing the convoy. When he started shooting, I turned my back to see if there anybody moved from the traffic towards the.
Oh.
He was trying to make sure that nobody was moving. Actually, why
wait? So he turned to see if a movement had provoked the shooting.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
صاحت لقيت أمريه من السيارة اللي هي الكيل اللي كريدوس البيضة. ابني من توجهت لها رحت باوعت لقيت ابنها اللي هو طالب الكلية طب الدكتور.
Okay. As you just said, he thought that the he was shooting above the car level, but when he turned his face towards traffic, he heard this woman crying, my son, and then he ran into that direction, and he saw her son, who was
كان يدرس في الطب.
He was a medical student. He was all covered in blood. Maskafir. He said he went, when he heard the woman crying, he went towards that direction, and he tried to help the medical student who was covered in blood, help him out of the car, but the mother inside was holding tight to her son. طيب انت بتحاول تخرجه والام ماسكه
طيب ام ماسكته ده اخذه واشر له انه لا ترمي لاي رمي المقتول الشخص مقتول
انا was he raised his hand to stop
ده جرى سياره يعني قباله ده سوى هيك لا ترمي
he was telling them not to shoot
قامت العجله الرابعه اطلاق النار على المرايه كتلتها بمكانها
he said while he was he raised his hand and asking them not to shoot this time the man in the fourth car shot the mother dead.
السيارة شوية ما سيطر عليها الدكتور مات والدكتورة ميتة.
طيب.
السيارة أوتوماتيك.
راحت عليه.
راحت عليه قام يضربها بالرمان صوت شلون الأمبكشن.
الأمبكشن لل.
سبق ماشين جان.
ماشين جان. أوكي. طيب.
قام حرق السيارة.
أوكي. ولعت ال. طيب. He said the car was number four in line. And then when the person in car number four, security man, started shooting, he shot the mother dead. And the cars in front of this car, the civilian cars, actually, they spread around to the sites. I think they were scared. And he said the doctor's car was an automatic car. Because he died behind the wheel, the car started moving by itself because it was an automatic car towards the square. And at this moment, they started shooting the car with big machine guns, and the car exploded.
فوضى
يعني جلطة شديدة.
فوضى شديدة. انسحبت. أنا ورا ما انسحبت. قلت لك ضربني ثلاث طلقات بالباب وكسر الجامع. نوبة انسحبت أنا غير منطقة. يعني أكمل لك بالحكي بعدين من.
Okay. He says when they start moving to the sites, actually he had backed up here, and there was heavy shooting randomly. So at that time, he said the situation was so chaotic that I couldn't really tell who actually did what. And he went behind the booth, and he was hiding there, and they shot at him three times, hitting the traffic light and the door behind which he was hiding.
الثالثة على اتجاه اليرموك والرابعة ترمي باتجاه الحارثية ضربت أبو البيكة من هنا كان قاتل من المسجد الطريق وأبو دراجة كتلته.
Okay. Okay, I was just looking for clarification. Okay. He was hiding behind the booth. They shot at him three times. And then he moved from here, he ran into this area.
Okay.
He crossed the street, actually.
Okay.
And here there's a little tiny hill. He hid behind that. And he could peek, and he could see that the first car was shooting at this direction. There was a red bus.
Down Abu Ghraib Street.
Yes.
Okay.
Bus Ahmar.
Bus Ahmar.
ومعه سيارة.
ورا باصين اثنين صغار.
Okay. Minibus, يعني minibus.
Bus.
Minibus. Yeah. There was a big red bus and two minibuses. And the first car was shooting at this direction.
At the cars.
Okay. الناس نزلوا من العربة واحتموا ورا التلمع.
ورا التلمع قام يعني الناس اللي شلون الأفلام الأمريكية من يقمز من الجامع.
طيب.
لأن اللي بس يريد يخلص ناس من الجامع اللي قام يعيط مضروب ويجي شيء عليه يعني شيء من جوا على الساحة.
أوكي معك خلف التلة.
خلف التلة.
أوكي.
لأن هاي الساحة صايرة نزلة شلون التلة ونزلة.
أوكي. When they started shooting from the first car. At the bus and the minibuses, the people got out of the bus through the windows, and they jumped out actually, and they start running and hiding behind the same hill as him.
وكفتحة عريضة تطلع من الحزب الكردستاني وراء وتطلع على المنطقة. لما يطلعون العالم المضروب يعيط واللي يركض مفزوع يعني واللي.
He said he actually advised people. To go through this street here between the residential area and this building and get away from the shooting. He said people were crying, people were running around, people were injured, and it was so chaotic.
وفعلا الطيارة قامت ترمي على هالمنطقة هاي وقامت ترمي على اتجاه اليرموك.
Okay. He said after a while they were shooting from the helicopter towards this area.
How long did the heavy shooting go on?
الضربة الصغيرة استمرت فترة قدرية تقريبا.
قريبا ربع ساعة إلى ثلث ساعة.
Between 15 to 20 minutes.
When they drove away, what happened next?
Yeah. طيب وين غنب الدخان كان هون؟
هنا هاي الدخان كلها متروسة هاي الساحة.
Okay. هون غنب الدخان.
كلها.
They threw smoke bombs here. It was, he said they were colorful, green and all colors. And then they started driving this way, but while driving, they were shooting everywhere.
Ali Khalaf Salman, the traffic guard, describing the infamous Blackwater attack on September 16th in Nisour Square in Baghdad. When we come back from break, we'll go to Dr. Jawad, who lost both his wife and son, part of which we just heard a description of. And we'll continue to talk with the lawyer who's bringing suit against Blackwater and a representative of Human Rights Watch who also participated in these interviews. Stay with us.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes.
Masters of War. Bob Dylan here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting on over 650 stations around the country and the world on Pacifica and NPR stations, low-power FM, college and community radio stations on public access TV and PBS TV stations, and both TV satellite networks on Dish Network, Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and on DirecTV, Channel 375, and we're video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. Our headlines available in Spanish, in transcript and audio form for any radio station to take. I'm Amy Goodman as we bring you this exclusive today. What you just saw, Ali Khalaf Salman, on television is a TV broadcast exclusive. The first time this testimony has been aired on television in the United States. The traffic guard describing the infamous Blackwater attack on September 16th in Baghdad. Next up, we're going to hear from Dr. Jawad describing what happened to his wife and his son, both killed in this attack. Susan Burke, our guest, she is the lead attorney in the Blackwater lawsuits. Today, we're breaking that the Blackwater has been sued again. Susan Burke is working with the Center for Constitutional Rights. But before we go on to the doctor, Susan Burke, describe the significance of the testimony that we just watched and heard.
Well, what's incredibly key about it is that you had a gentleman who's a trained observer. He's a traffic guard. He was right in the center of all the activity, and he is able to testify with precise detail about when the shooting started. And so what he puts to rest is this contention of Blackwater's that somehow they were under attack. He testifies very clearly that it was Blackwater shooting that killed the young medical student in the car. The car was not moving, it was stopped, and so it was a completely unprovoked attack. So we are very fortunate that he's brave and willing to come forward and testify so precisely. He was right in the middle. He was physically right in the middle of the activity.
Let's now go to Dr. Jawad, who lost both his wife, Mahassan, and his son, Ahmed, on September 16th. It was their deaths that traffic guard Ali Khalaf Salman witnessed and tried to stop. In this excerpt, we hear Dr. Jawad describing how he came to learn of what had happened to his family. He'd been waiting that day for his wife and son to pick him up from work. When he returned home alone that afternoon, he was worried not to find them there. He finally began to make calls to try and track them down. Dr. Jawad is being translated from the Arabic.
I called somebody in the Yarmouk neighborhood. And I asked if there were any kind of event, incidents on that day in that neighborhood. He told me that the American, there are American soldiers in the neighborhood everywhere. About 5 p.m. I called my brother, Dr. Raed. He was in his private clinic. He left his private clinic and he went to the Yarmouk hospital. They searched into the room, the
surgical room.
They didn't find them, and then they went to the operation room.
Okay, they didn't find.
They were looking for Mahasin and Ahmed.
Okay.
وهذا فد عمل يعني كلش شائع بالعراق يعني من شخص يتأخر يبحثون عنه بالمستشفيات وبال يعني مورج
المستشفيات. That was almost a very
usual
procedure. If somebody is late, then that's the first place you go and look for the person there in Iraq.
فما وجدتهم في غرفة العمليات يعني من الأسماء الموجودة ولا.
He checked the list name and names on the list and he didn't find their names.
فذهب إلى المورك.
He went to the morg.
فكان الشخص المسؤول على المورك أخبرهم بأنه استلموا 16 جثة من الحادث.
And the person who was responsible for the morgue told them that they received 16 bodies as casualties from the incident of that day.
كلها كانت معروفة الهوية.
They were all identifiable.
ما عدا اثنين.
Except for two.
جثتين محروقة ومشوهة.
Two bodies completely burnt.
And disfigured.
And
this.
They were put in black plastic bags.
أخي كان الصبح في المستشفى لما صار الحادث. سمع الأصوات المعركة كانت معركة عنيفة وكانت طائرات الهليكوبتر يعني تدور حول المنطقة وترمي من الهليكوبتر.
My brother on that day in the morning he was in the hospital. And he heard the shots, and he heard the helicopters and shooting from helicopters. It was a battle, a fight.
And
of course, it didn't occur to him that my wife and my son were among the victims of the incident.
My wife, what remained from his head is only the jaws and part of the neck. But I identified her from the dental bridge. He has got a dental bridge. And my son, what remained from his clothes was only part of the shoes.
Dr. Jawad describing his wife and his son. They were killed in the Blackwater attack on September 16th in Nisa Square in Baghdad. We turn now to Dr. Jawad describing how State Department officials in Iraq tried to offer him money to compensate him for his loss.
Then he said there was a question that he had to ask me.
كم تطلب ثمن للأرواح اللي فقدتها؟
how much money would you like in as compensation for the loss of the lives?
فكان اكو مترجم موجود فالمترجم بادر قال they are priceless.
There was an interpreter, and the interpreter abruptly, immediately said to her,
to him,
their lives are priceless.
You have to give me an account of an amount for dollar amount. I told him I can't give you an amount. A few days later, about this was on Saturday, I guess, October 20. 3 days later, 4 days later, I don't remember, I guess, on Wednesday, next Wednesday, they wanted me to attend at the State Department, or at the embassy. Just to offer a condolence or condolence. I was really busy. بعض أشخاص يعني ما أعرف سبعة أو ثمانية ذهبوا إلى ذاك اللقاء.
Some people, about seven or eight people, went to that meeting in the embassy.
وأخبروني إنه أعطوهم يعني 10,000 دولار. كتعويض لل لضحايا قتلهم.
And they told me that they were given $10,000 each for their loss, for the lives of their beloved.
ووقع على أوراق بالإنجليزية ما يعرفون يقروها.
And they signed on papers written in English, although they did not know English.
وما كان واضح إنه هذا كان مبلغ عن تعويضات أو غير تعويضات.
And the amount of money paid was not clear. The purpose of the payment was not really clear. Whether it was compensation or something else.
يعني كنت مشمئز جدا من هذا الخبر.
I was disgusted when I heard this news.
Dr. Jawad. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. He's describing being offered money by the U.S. government in Iraq. Our guests are Susan Burke, who is lead counsel in the Blackwater lawsuit, working with the Center for Constitutional Rights. We're also joined by Jennifer Daskal. She's the counterterrorism counsel at Human Rights Watch. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. Talk about the significance of Dr. Jawad's testimony, both his testimony, Jennifer, and also talking about his experience being offered money.
Well, his testimony just highlights the complete tragedy of what happened here. I mean, two lives destroyed, two innocent lives destroyed, based on unprovoked, or what appear to be, very clearly appear to be unprovoked shooting by Blackwater. And the tragedy that he suffered is just, it's horrific. What's really remarkable here is, as he noted very eloquently, the insult that State Department officials would offer him just $10,000 per life lost. That's nothing close to an adequate compensation for loved ones, for his wife and his first son. And what's really shocking is that there's no accountability, there's no system in place to really ensure that these types of incidents don't happen again, and that when they do, that there's oversight, that there's penalties, and that there's real consequences for these types of actions. And that's why we've seen this happen over and over and over again. And finally now, with the Blackwater shooting, it's finally coming to light, the September 16th shooting.
Dr. Jawad's son, a medical student, 20 years old, his wife, Mohsin, a dermatologist in Iraq. Jennifer, describe what it was like to go with Susan Burke the team to Istanbul to meet with these various eyewitnesses and victims of the Blackwater shooting.
Well, every single person who came to Istanbul was incredibly brave to come forward and tell their story. And the stories were, as Susan said earlier, quite tragic. This is totally senseless loss of life. You heard from Ali Khalif, the trained policeman who was there on the scene, standing next to the car when the doctor's son and wife were shot. The car was stopped, as Susan said. This totally contradicts Blackwater's story that they were in some way under attack or provoked when they were shot at. And it's incredibly important that this perspective gets out and that their stories get told so that the truth of what happens actually gets heard and that maybe there will be some changes so that there is some accountability and there is some action taken to stop these types of actions and to ensure that private contractors are held accountable for their actions. There's between 20,000 and 30,000 private security contractors in Iraq right now. And there's extremely limited oversight over what they're doing, over their hiring practices, over vetting of employees. There's absolutely no systemized compensation system for incidents like this or other incidents where people's lives are lost or property is damaged. And that absolutely needs to change.
Jennifer Daskal, you wrote in a piece in Salon.com that Eric Prince's prepared testimony, when we played earlier when he testified before Congress, also asserted that one of the vehicles had been disabled by enemy fire and had to be towed, and he contended the helicopters never fired on those below. But that actually, those words were never delivered. Why?
Those words were never delivered because the day before Eric Prince testified, the Department of Justice announced that it was launching a criminal investigation into the attacks. And the Department of Justice asked the committee not to discuss the specific September 16th incident. We do know that, from the testimony that Susan collected, that there— according to the witnesses who were at the scene, there is beyond a doubt that helicopters were firing and were overhead and that they were shooting bullets. There are pictures of cars that show extremely large holes in the car that were that suggest that look as if there was some sort of projectile that was coming from above. And we also know from the witnesses at the scene that the cars drove off, that there were no cars that were disabled that needed to be towed.
We're talking—
and so the witness's testimony completely contradict Mr. Prince's prepared statement for the committee.
Jennifer Daskal and Susan Burke are our guests. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to a second video testimony, and that is of a bank employee, a computer technician who worked at the local bank, describing what happened to him and what he saw. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We'll be back in a minute.
شمعة العشرة انطفت غلطة مرت وانتهت شمعة العشرة انطفت والذنب هو ذنبكم والذنب هو ذنبكم تايبين وللمحبة غلطة ودفعنا ثمنها أجمل أيام السنين أجمل أيام السنين تايبين وللمحبة ما يرجعنا الحنين ما يرجعنا الحنين غلطة ودفعنا ثمنها أجمل أيام السنين
تايبين ألمار توفيق from the film about Baghdad. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go now to the second TV video, we've played one TV video, one audio. This is the first time this has been shown on television, and it's an interview done with Abdul Wahab, a computer technician at the Trade Bank of Iraq. On September 16th, he was on his way to buy a gift for his friend's baby when he was stuck in traffic near Nisour Square. He became both a witness and a victim of the Blackwater shootings that day. This is an excerpt of the interview that he did with Bill O'Neill, who is Susan Burke's partner in the legal team working with Center for Constitutional Rights.
Okay, and when you pulled into the area near Nisour Square and traffic stopped, what did you do next? Did you stay in your car or get out of the
car? I've stayed in the car. When I heard a bullet sound, I opened the door and get up to see what's happened there.
Okay. So you heard the bullets before you ever saw anyone shooting?
Yeah, I heard the bullet, and I saw the helicopters start rolling up of the square.
How many helicopters did
Two
you
Two helicopters. Blue.
Blue?
Blue and small.
Small or
small? Small, small helicopters, blue. Mm-hmm.
Did they have any markings on them?
No. All I can see is one guy قاعد على في فتحة بالهليكوبتر يجلس فيها شخص يكون حامل سلاح.
All what I saw, there was a guy sitting and this open. It was a door, like door in the helicopter where guys sit and take their weapons like this.
You saw people in the helicopter with weapons.
One guy.
Just one person.
One person.
And the door open door. And
the door open. Okay. And he's tightly
he's strapped in.
Yeah, of course.
Just on both sides of the door? Helicopter?
No, one side. One side of the helicopter.
Both helicopters you saw?
Both helicopters, they have
the same.
One. The same. Okay.
And they were circling over?
Circling over us.
Okay. Have you seen helicopters like this before?
Yeah, I've seen these helicopters before. Mm-hmm. We know this is for American soldiers. We don't know the company or for army, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Does the Iraqi police have helicopters?
No. No. They don't. They have cars. Only cars.
Okay. So when you heard the shots, were they coming?
At that time, I want to give you a point. Mm-hmm. My mother called me by the cell phone, so I talked to her and see what happened. I saw a white car start burning. It's far from me, but you can see. Mm-hmm. Okay, I told my mother, Mom, there is a white car start burning. So she told me, Hubi, please get back to the house. I tell her, okay, I will, if I can't. So I close my cell phone and tell the people behind me, please open the road, get back and wrong side to be حتى نكون بعيدين عن مكان منطقة خطرة.
It's a dangerous area, so please let us try to escape from here.
Abdul Wahab describing getting shot in the arm while trying to get out of Nisour Square as fast as possible. An armored car was closing in on him.
When they hit my car, I feel my hands get broken. Mm-hmm. I know they outshot me. So I opened the door and dropped myself in the street.
Okay, so they had hit you on the other side of the car.
Yes.
And then did you hear a shot?
No. Just I feel my hand is broken. Mm-hmm. Something hit my hand and hit my leg from here. Mm-hmm. It's a scratch, you know, scratch my leg. Mm-hmm. And there is something getting inside, like the frag mm-hmm. of bullets. I don't know, maybe it's...
Did it feel hot?
No, nothing. Mm-hmm. Just feel, she said,
numb. I felt it numb.
In your leg.
Yeah.
And in your arm.
Because...
Is it your left leg?
Yes, this leg.
Okay, left leg.
I can show it. Show you. Okay. There's a scars mm-hmm. my leg here. So I dropped my. I tell you, I opened the door because I thought they wanted to kill me.
And they were going by you on the other side of your car.
Yeah, they are in the other side.
And they had already hit your car, and they were continuing to move.
Yeah, they hit my car.
وكملوا مشيهم رايحين.
لا هاي ورا ما ضربوني كملوا مشيهم.
Yes, after they shot me, they continued going.
Abdul Wahab, the bank employee, describing what happened to him. For our radio listeners who can't see the video, and you can go to our website at democracynow.org to see all of this, he has a pin or a brace on his arm where he was shot. Jennifer Daskal, the significance of this testimony of the bank employee, Jennifer Daskal, counterterrorism counsel at Human Rights Watch, who, together with Susan Burke and Bill O'Neill, conducted these interviews in Istanbul, bringing the Iraqi victims and witnesses to Turkey to speak.
Well, two things here. First, again, he describes trying to get away and being shot at. Again, another example, another testimony corroborating the other testimony we've heard that the shootings were unprovoked. And the other really interesting thing about his testimony is he describes how, you know, the Iraqis, he and other Iraqis, all know that when there are helicopters roaming overhead, that this is associated with Americans. He doesn't know if it's American soldiers or American contractors. And I think it's very important to realize that these actions, the actions of these contractors, seriously undermine what the military is trying to do in Iraq. And seriously, the Iraqis don't distinguish between American soldiers and American contractors. And when Americans, regardless of who they are out on the streets and engaging in violent, unprovoked activities like this, it damages the United States' reputation all around the world. It seriously undermines the efforts, the really key efforts to win hearts and minds. And it's absolutely essential, as I said before, that these contractors are brought under a system. If they're going to continue to exist, there needs to be measures. There needs to be vetting of who they're hiring. There needs to be training mechanisms in place. There needs to be vigorous criminal prosecutions. To date, there has not been a single criminal prosecution of a contractor who's killed or injured an Iraqi, despite legions of stories of incidents similar to the September 16th shooting incident. And that's not acceptable.
Susan Burke, after the attack, after it came out, the guards were interviewed, the Blackwater operatives, or guards, however you want to call them, others call them mercenaries, and told they had immunity. What is happening right now on that front?
Well, I think the reality is that the Department of Justice is looking at criminal prosecution of these shooters. And the vernacular among the mercenary crowd is the people that go out with the guns are called the shooters. So we're very hopeful that there will be some type of criminal accountability, because that, more than anything, is what's needed in these instances, because this is criminal conduct, and it's criminal conduct right in the daylight in front of people. So you have to be worried about this culture of lawlessness that's been created, the impunity with which they act. Obviously, the civil suit, as one of the reporters coined a phrase yesterday on the phone with me, I thought it was interesting. He called it accountability by liability. And, you know, certainly the civil suits are part of the accountability, but we very much encourage the Department of Justice to go forward with the criminal actions.
And, Jennifer, what sense did you have that the U.S. government is pursuing this vigorously, and under what laws would they be tried?
Well, again, I mean, it seems as if the FBI and the Department of Justice have made statements and have suggested that they're going after this particular incident, and that is, without a doubt, welcome news. There is an extraterritorial jurisdictional law in place that provides some limited jurisdiction over these types of incidents. It's not as broad or as far-reaching as is needed to cover necessarily all of the shooting incidents that take place in some of these countries, and there is legislation moving through Congress right now that would try to close some of those gaps. But it's pretty clear in this case the Department of Justice does have jurisdiction, and it is certainly welcome news that the Department of Justice seems to be trying to exercise its jurisdiction in this case. The concern here is that this shouldn't just stop with the September 16th shooting. There have been numerous cases, numerous instances of reported abuse that have either gone in uninvestigated, or if investigated, the prosecution just was dropped. And there absolutely needs to be more resources put into these prosecutions. There needs to be FBI teams dedicated to trying to gather the doing the very difficult job of gathering evidence in what is essentially a war zone. And there needs to be much better coordination between the agencies so that incidents are referred over quickly to the Department of Justice so investigations can get underway.
We're going to turn now to another company. Blackwater is not the only private U.S. corporation facing lawsuits for alleged abuses in Iraq. On Monday, hundreds of Iraqis held at Abu Ghraib and other Iraqi prisons filed a lawsuit against the private military contractor CACI. The company itself calls itself CACI. The suit alleges the Iraqis were repeatedly sodomized, threatened with rape, kept naked in their cells, subjected to electric shock, attacked by unmuzzled dogs, subjected to serious pain inflicted on sensitive body parts while being held at Abu Ghraib. The suit alleges employees of CACI directed soldiers to mistreat prisoners at Abu Ghraib and that employees of the company were involved in the wrongful deaths of three Iraqi men at Abu Ghraib. The lawsuit filed once again by Susan Burke and the Center for Constitutional Rights. Joining us today in our studio as we've been talking to her through the hour, talk about this lawsuit you've just filed in the last day.
Well, this is actually a continuation of a lawsuit that we previously filed back in June of 2004. We had brought it as a class action after the leaking of the Taguba report and after we had been approached by some of the victims of the Abu Ghraib torture. And one thing I would point out is that this CACI's conduct in this instance, CACI employees were directly involved in torturing prisoners. This is information that's known. It's information that is known to the Department of Justice. Yet there have not been any criminal prosecutions. So when you think about the passage of time here, you have to ask, why have there been no criminal prosecutions? It's very troubling and it's very concerning that our civil action is the only current mechanism for accountability for the private participation in the Abu Ghraib scandal. The other comment I would make is that there's a perception that it was just the Abu Ghraib scandal and that's the only place where the torture occurred. You know, sadly, that's just not true. The same type of conduct was happening elsewhere. People were being mistreated in other facilities. And again, CACI was not in all of the facilities, but they were in a substantial number, and their employees participated.
We invited CACI to join us on the program today, but they declined our request. CACI spokesperson Jody Brown issued the following statement, though. She said, CACI totally rejects and denies all the plaintiffs' allegations and claims in their amended legal filing of December 17, 2007. These accusations and allegations in their latest and ever-changing lawsuit are a rehash of their original baseless submissions. The attempt by plaintiffs' counsel to portray CACI as engaged in a conspiracy to abuse detainees is unmitigated fiction perpetrated by plaintiffs' counsel as part of their big lie propaganda campaign to keep their lawsuit afloat and their personal political agendas in the public light. 3.5 years after filing their original complaint, not one of the more than 200 plaintiffs has connected their generic allegations of abuse to any CACI personnel. No CACI employee or former employee has been charged with any misconduct in connection with CACI's interrogation work in Iraq. From day one, CACI has rejected the outrageous allegations of this lawsuit and will continue to do so. Susan Burke, your response.
Well, the reality is that the information that we have is information that is under oath testimony from court martials. And so there are the co-conspirators, the people that are serving time in prison, are the ones that are identifying Big Steve and DJ and the others as having given them the orders to torture. So for CACI to be, it's interesting that CACI is so aggressive in their denials when they know that on the record in under oath testimony is direct evidence.
What do you mean court martial testimony?
There were a series of court martials when Charles Grainer was convicted, Sergeant Frederick was convicted, and so the testimony from the convicted torturers has labeled.
And you're talking about CACI directing U.S. soldiers?
Yes, the CACI interrogators were placed in the role of the military intelligence.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue our discussion tomorrow. We've been talking with Susan Burke, working with the Center for Constitutional Rights, about the CACI lawsuit and the two Blackwater lawsuits about two attacks, September 9th and September 16th. And special thanks also to Jen Daskal of Human Rights Watch. DemocracyNow.org, our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.